Episode 219.
I don't think they really understand how much technology is in these cars and what goes into the repair process. And it's not the back alley shade tree mechanic that they might have that is depicted throughout the media or whatever that they think might, they might get that impression for an auto repair industry. So when we talk to them and we tell them, look, you know, our technicians wear nitrile gloves, they wear, they use scan tools and computers all day. It's not, they still get dirty, obviously, but you know, and then when you start to talk about the potential earnings for a technician, it just, it's mind blowing to them because they have no idea what a technician can earn because they're not made aware of that.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results.
Hey, aftermarketers, welcome to Remarkable Results Radio podcast. I'm Carm Capriotto. You know you're in the place where you come for ideas, insights, and trends from your industry peers. Now, today I'm with Nick Lenhart from Lenhart's Service Center in North Huntingdon, PA. This episode is made possible through the sponsorship of Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Search for parts, get the latest technical updates, and sign up for their new Garage Rewards loyalty program at their all-new website, fmmotorparts.com. Hey, by now, I hope you've discovered the Town Hall Academy. There you get an in-depth discussion with up to three of your industry peers on a single subject. My panel on the Town Hall Academy is there because they have a passion for the subject. It's broadcast live every Friday on Facebook and repurposed on my YouTube channel. Now, to get your share of the insights and wisdom, go to remarkableresults.biz/learning and set up your own lunch and learn time. Hey, a shout out to my new Facebook friends, George Zeeks, Sam Ballard Jr., Chan Patel, and Lauren Anderson. And to my new LinkedIn connections, Brandon Steckler, Danny Bender, and Michael Yu. You can find all my social links at remarkableresults.biz/social. Hey, did you get my podcast app yet on your iOS or Android smart device? Well, if you haven't, go to the App Store and search for Remarkable Results Radio. And in about 2 minutes, you'll have all the episodes at your fingertips. And remember, listen to learn just one thing. Now meet Nick Lenhart. You've heard the talk in your circles and on the podcast about millennials, right? You've heard my guests say, enough with the millennial nonsense, and I'm getting to that point also. They are an important customer base for you and are important members of our industry. Therefore, when I find an engaging family legacy millennial member of our industry, I'm all in for an interview. Now, Nick Lenhart is a fourth-generation member of the family business. He is partners with his dad, and he has an enlightening view of his career so far and how he and his dad are forging a strong partnership. Now, you know of the statistics for fourth-generation family success. It's not good, but it looks like Nick and his dad, Ken, are working very hard not to become a statistic. Nick is very transparent in this interview, and you'll be impressed with the quality of our industry's bench strength as we rely on newer generations to strive in our beloved aftermarket. This, like all other episodes, is packed with very strong takeaways. Now, for additional bio information on Nick Lenhart, talking points, and pictures, see the show notes page for Nick, remarkableresults.biz/E219. Here comes a great interview for the podcast archives that you can enjoy on demand over and over again. Now, here we go with Nick Lenhart. A warm welcome to Nick Lenhart, General Manager and part owner at Lenhart's Service Center Tire Pros. Hey, I'm glad we hooked up. You're an SOB like I used to be, a son of a boss, and you got raised in the business.
Yeah, from the time I was a little kid, my dad would bring me to work, and I was in charge of sweeping floors, cleaning vehicles, cleaning tow trucks, cleaning windows. So I came up through the ranks. I was the head flashlight holder for many years.
Yeah, you were in charge of the brooms, right?
put a lot of time in that.
Did you ever participate in after school activities, or did Dad make sure you were at the business?
No, so he honestly encouraged me to do that. I remember he would say all the time, you know, you're going to have your whole life to work. My first thing is I couldn't wait for my mom to get home from school, or, you know, she would come home from work and pick me up and then take me to work when I was in middle school and before I had my driver's license. And I just couldn't wait to get to work. I was money hungry. I wanted to buy things and my parents weren't going to buy them for me.
Interesting motivation, you know, and especially the fact that you were being paid to hang out, to work, to do things, to learn.
dollar a day when I first started working there.
For you, you probably took a look at that dollar bill and say, wow, how many more of these can I get, huh?
I was living high on the horse, man. That was that was big money back when you were in elementary school.
High on the horse yeah. I found out that you attended tech school during high school, and we continue to talk today about those programs that aren't there and aren't strong enough in so many of our districts. Was that really a good foundation for you?
We were very fortunate for our tech school. It was very well funded. We had the latest and greatest equipment. The people that ran our tech school were constantly just getting that grant money and trying to do everything they could do to get the best equipment and the best staff that they could possibly have there. My biggest concern with all of this was the homeschool, or my home high school where I went to, seemed to push kids that weren't maybe college material to these tech schools. And I took a little bit of issue with that because the teachers spent a lot of time disciplining those kids that didn't want to be there in the first place. But the home high school said, well, you know, maybe you're not going to go on to high school or college or higher education. Why don't you go to the tech school? We need kids that are intelligent, able to read, comprehend. And when they push these other kids to these schools, it's, I don't know. I had a little bit of an issue with that. I mean, I took it really seriously, and a lot of the other kids did too, but the high schools didn't put as much value on the tech school program as I thought they should have.
Well, thanks for that, because we know how badly we need to get kids who want to work with their hands. You know, it's maybe not the issue that they're not college material. No, the issue today is, hey, I want to work with my hands. I don't necessarily have to go be a lawyer or a doctor. That doesn't necessarily float my boat. And that's what we hear today.
Right. And I think, you know, I talked to a group of kids about a month ago at the high school. They have a career day, and the Chamber of Commerce asked us to come in and talk to these kids. So they get to pick what careers they want to go talk to. And when the kids come in, you know, I don't think they really understand how much technology is in these cars and what goes into the repair process. And it's not the back alley shade tree mechanic that they might have that is depicted throughout the media or whatever that they think they might get that impression for an auto repair industry. So when we talk to them and we tell them, look, you know, our technicians wear nitrile gloves, they use scan tools and computers all day. It's not, they still get dirty, obviously, but you know, and then when you start to talk about the potential earnings for a technician, it's mind blowing to them because they have no idea what a technician can earn because they're not made aware of that.
Do you think you've made a difference in talking to career days?
I think if you reach one or two kids, you make a difference. I like to think that I do. I mean, I go up there, you know, as a former technician, as a business owner, and I talk to them and I say, look, it's not just about fixing cars. There's a lot of other avenues in the automotive industry that you could take. You know, I have a lot of friends that were technicians that went on to be instructors for manufacturers, instructors for parts suppliers, you know, body guys that went on to be insurance adjusters, guys that are in marketing. Now, I mean, just look at, you know, on your podcast, how many guys you have are technicians that are now software engineers or they started a marketing company. So where you can go is endless from this industry.
That seems to be a big part of the message that's not getting out there, is that there are so many opportunities, but I think there's like 4 million people that work in the aftermarket. And yeah, from manufacturing to owning your own business, you're right.
Yeah, from a millennial standpoint, you know, I talk to these kids all the time, and it's just like there's so many opportunities there, not just in our industry, and not to get off subject, but with the automotive industry. But I have friends that are linemen for a power line company that are making six figures a year climbing telephone poles. These kids aren't told that. They're told that they need to go to college and that that's the path they need to take. And it's just not true.
Got it. So, Nick, the reason I had you on is I loved your story about being in the fourth generation, and you are a millennial. Wow. Tell me about the fourth gen.
You know, a lot different than my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents. You know, my dad always told me when I was your age, your grandfather and I would just have to work really hard and you made money. And that just doesn't seem like it's the case anymore. I mean, we could, you know, just work our tails off and just spin your wheels and still not come out ahead. So it's just completely different. When I was a kid, things were, I think, slower. You know, my dad always told me a story. He would come to work with my grandfather in the mornings. And at that time we were with Gulf Gas and we had gas pumps. And this one truck would pull in every morning to fill up on his way out of Pittsburgh. And, you know, after about 20 minutes, there'd be five or six cars behind it. Everybody be inside drinking coffee, reading the paper. And he said, could you imagine that now? I mean, if you don't move your car, you know, after you get gas, people are blowing the horn ready to kill you. So just a little bit different times now than it was back in those days. So just a little bit higher paced, I think.
So in the last 10 years, you've been, what, very active in the business, about 8 or 9 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the difference between, in just the last 10 years, you took ownership with your dad and a partner a couple of years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago we became partners, correct.
That's just excellent. Was that a legacy of partnerships going back to your grandfather?
So it started with my grandfather in 1930. He was the first one to start the business. It was a little mobile gas station. Did minor repairs, and then in 1932 they went to Gulf Gas, and they had Gulf Gas up until about 1989. But at that point in the late 50s, my grandfather became a partner with him, and then my dad became partners with my grandfather in the late 70s, early 80s, and then my dad took full ownership when my grandfather retired. And 2 years ago, my dad and I became partners together. So that's sort of the timeline.
Got it. Thanks. It's interesting, and I love family legacies. I just do. The differences between you and your dad.
I always say this: we have the same goal, but our ideas on how we're going to get there are completely different, and that can lead to some challenges. And you know, he is a very direct person. He gets things done. Come hell or high water. I mean, it's just he'll ramrod something until it happens and makes it happen. And my personality is completely different. You know, I'm more of the let's take all the information. You know, I think on it, then I make a decision that way. And not him. It's just he makes a decision right or wrong. Boom, sticks with it. We have an interesting dynamic, but we offset each other too. So, which is good.
I'm talking to Bud Houston, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Hey, Bud, what's the best thing about the Guru on the Go van?
Yeah, I think that the best thing about the van and the kind of the mission is it's twofold. One is ultimately to bring brand awareness of the Federal Mogul portfolio. But I think the way that we do that is we bring value to the technician, the shop owner. And how we do that is we bring technical content, we bring some updated material, and once they see that I care about their operation, their reputation, and their qualifications, one, they're built up, but two, they really at that point listen to what I have to say about the brands, and it's built, the relationship is built on a mutual benefit.
So you bring technical stuff and you bring product specific.
Yeah, me personally, I'm super technical background. So anytime I'm doing a lunch and learn or a van visit, a training session, it's typically 90% technical, 10% product.
Any new Moog products that are getting good reviews?
Yeah, one that's recently released is the Dodge Ram 25 and 3500 complete steering assembly. It's inner and outer tie rod ends and drag link pre-assembled. This is the first aftermarket part that's available in a complete assembly for this application. And then the specific application to late model Dodge Rams are actually a kind of a high failure part on the chassis parts.
What about the compression-loaded ball joints with pre-installed integral dust boot?
Yeah, the integral dust boot has been a huge hit. Initially, the idea was well, where is the boot? And then once you kind of get around and show people, they're like, well, that is the best idea I've ever seen because I've torn so many boots on installation or I've had a boot that's not seated properly. And they're like, well, that's just not an issue now. And they love it.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the Gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. You know, what's interesting is you always talk about how failing forward is important, making a decision, you know, even if you have enough information, and then you continue to learn from your mistakes or errors, if you will. Did Dad learn from those?
I think that's part of the reason why he is the way that he is because he came from that school of hard knocks where it either, you know, cost him money, cost him employees, you know, but he learned from all that, you know, and as I get older, I realize what he's telling me or teaching me, you know, the old man's not that crazy after all.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? The older you get, the smarter your dad gets.
That's very true. You know, and I think I told you before, you know, a friend of mine, Ryan, and I had had these conversations about our fathers in the business. And, you know, we go to our 20 group meetings and we like to sit there and cut up on our dads and criticize them. And, you know, but at the end of that conversation, it's always, well, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be in this place to begin with. So, you know, they had to do something right to get us here. So they've afforded us that opportunity to be here.
What I think you guys got that's working, that is the reason and success of the generational ownership, is that you both know your roles.
Yes. And that is not easy to do or to figure out. My dad, for years, didn't have anyone to answer to. You know, if the bills were getting paid and, you know, nobody was going to question him on his decision-making process, and in comes, you know, his, at that time, early 20s son, as the what's the word I'm looking for? The responsibilities grow on my end, and I, as I'm given more responsibility and looked at in a different light as, you know, one's the one making the decisions, I take a more leadership role, but then where does that leave him at? It's an interesting dynamic.
I hear where you're going, and what I'm thinking is accountability partner.
That's the word I'm looking for. As my accountability goes up and I start to really try and find my place in the business and start to make decisions that affect the company, he may not necessarily agree with them, but he gives me the room to make those decisions. And sometimes you just have to fail on your own. Every decision I'm going to make is not going to necessarily be the right one. But when I fail, I won't make that decision again.
And he's giving you the freedom to do that?
Yes, he is. There are some sometimes spirited conversations around those decisions. But again, our end goal is always the same. It's to, you know, provide, you know, the best customer service we can to our clients, fix the cars properly the first time, and just be good stewards in our community. So it's a challenge sometimes. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, it is a challenge.
It sounds like a great purpose, by the way. Now, just contrast today, your dad's strengths and your strengths.
So his strengths, 100%, I mean, he just gets things done. I mean, he sees something and he attacks it and he gets it done, whether it's big or small. I'm more detail oriented. I'm the one that steps back and looks at the little things and, you know, finances and you know, vendor dealings and customer things. You know, we don't really let him deal with clients too much now. He makes things happen. He sees, you know, he can sometimes be that visionary where he can see things in the future because he has the experience that I don't have. So I always hear, this is going to be a problem if you don't take care of it. And I don't recognize it because I'm going 100 mile an hour in eight different directions. But he'll see something and be like, you need to handle this or it's going to be a problem.
I love what you're saying, because here, when Dad was a solopreneur and he was running the business without you, he was saying that to himself. Now he's saying it to you, and he's probably waiting to see what you're going to do about it.
Yes, he is. And it's a challenge because you're trying to do so many different things at one time. And I honestly don't know how he did it because he worked on cars while he did all of the same things that I'm doing right now. And I've, you know, stepped out of that role a little bit. And I'm more of a, I am more of an owner role because I don't spend the time working on the cars and stuff like that. So it's just a little different.
I just love to tell my audience that as we've been talking about his dad and all these situations, Mr. Nick's smiling so much. And I hope his smile came through in the audio. Hey, talk about your business culture.
We've tried to build a culture in our shop where our employees want to come to work every day. We started from asking ourselves internally, where would we want to work at if we were technicians? You know, the stereotypical shop, dark, dull, dirty, grumpy guys. It's just, so we've tried to instill a culture and make it a good place to work. You know, we're closed on Saturdays, which was a difficult decision for us to make. We just recently repainted all the walls about 2 months ago, bright white again. New LED lighting in the shop, air conditioning on both sides of the shop. We're the only shop in the area that's fully air conditioned. I don't think you could ever go back from that now. Happy technicians are productive technicians, and we just try and keep it a good place to work. We have to be profitable, but we want the people to be happy there. So,
excellent. You're in the tire business.
We are. We're more service, but we're gaining traction with tires.
Okay. And I do you have the word tire in your name?
We are Lenhart Service Center, but we partnered with Tire Pros about 5 years ago. Tire Pros is the largest group of independently owned tire retailers in the country. It's been a very positive move for us. You know, tires were something that we always sold, but our clients didn't know that we sold tires. We, I guess, never really promoted that. So what we started to notice was we would get the client's car in for brakes, state inspection, oil change, but they would take the vehicle somewhere else for tires. And then we would notice a competitor's, let's just say a regional chain's oil change sticker under the hood or somebody else's state sticker. And so, well, where'd you, well, I went to get my tires here. And, you know, while they were there, they noticed that it needed brakes. And so we just told them to go ahead and do their brakes. And we said, we're missing a little bit of an opportunity here. So our partnership with the Tire Pros program was I believe, a good one for us. So that's how we got into that. And it's been very positive.
Are they helping you with marketing?
Yes. For many Tire Pros dealers, they'd probably tell you that the marketing is probably the strongest part of the program. You know, we have our own marketing manager. They have a full team of marketing professionals down in Huntersville, North Carolina. So we get together Q4 of what year you're in. We do a marketing budget. We sit down and we flight all of our marketing in conjunction with tire manufacturer rebates, any specials that we're going to have. We do regional advertising, national advertising, local advertising, and it really, they pretty much, you give them the information, they work with you, and then they handle it from there. So, which is something I don't have time to do on my own. So,
what chunk of your business is tires?
About 30%.
And has that been growing?
Yes. Yeah, we had about 20% unit growth last year.
Excellent. Well, thanks for telling me about the tires. And yeah, why not, right? What tech advances in the future could disrupt your business?
You know, I don't know that the advances. I think our ability to make sure that we keep up with the training to stay relevant with those tech advances is going to be the challenge, you know, with telematics being here and just the future of the industry and the way that the cars are changing and shaping, our ability to realize that and have our employees and our people get more actively involved in training, I think that's going to be the answer, is how we stay relevant. And that's a struggle, and that's something that we need to do better at, just being completely honest with you. In our shop, you know, it's tough to get, you know, your guys to do training and require training when they have families and, you know, they have their soccer coaches and their, you know, they have little ones. And, you know, it's not like when I was a kid when my dad would lock himself in the room and and study for his ASEs, you know.
You bring up a great point because of our time challenged world. And so the whole training issue is something I would just like to dig in just a little bit. I respect all that people have, they have families, and that's key and critical to a good business culture. When you look at your A-tech inside, in that he maybe hadn't gone for training in a while, does he come to you and say, as much as I know I have my own life, I've got to get out there because I need to stay relevant? Do you ever hear that?
Yeah, I mean, we have conversations. You know, I talk to them on a monthly basis about where they're at with their ASE certifications. You know, we constantly bring training to them. I mean, just like most shops, we'll pay for all their training. I'll send them to anything that they want to go to, because as much as it benefits them, it benefits us as well. So, but they have to want to do it. And that's, I tell you what, you know, we've had some guys in the past. It's just, you know, you can give them all the opportunities in the world, but if they don't want to take advantage of it, you really have to ask yourself, are they doing justice for your business and helping you move forward?
Well, you've listened to the podcast, and I ask this question to a lot of shop owners about the minimum hours that they require, and how can shops have that as a strong policy in their company and you not?
Because I don't think that I've put much focus on it, and I blame myself for that. I don't think that I've – I'm just being honest with you. I think that there are other channels that I'm working on right now, and I think that it is going to be something that I'm going to be faced with rather soon if I don't get on the ball with it. And it – you know, because the – your question is to how can they get away with it? Well, they put the policy in place and they manage to that policy. And if I haven't put that in place, I can't do that. I can walk around and talk to these guys all I want. But if I don't set the standard and enforce it, it's not going to happen.
Hey, Nick, when we were on the phone, it was really an amazing call. I almost called at the wrong time, or you called at the wrong time. I don't remember, but you were escorting a technician out the door. And, you know, it's rare to, you know, bump into a moment like that when, you know, you said, wait a minute, Carm, and I said, take that tool chest out here. And it, I realized I had jumped into an interesting situation. Okay, it doesn't matter why the person left. And obviously, well, you told me, and it was a really grievous error. But how did you, or how can you, or what about this technician shortage, and how are you going to replace this person?
You try and keep people is sometimes longer, I think, than we should, because there is such a shortage in technicians. So I think we tend to hang on to people longer than we really should. And unfortunately, you know, this individual had a policy. We had a policy in the shop, and he didn't adhere to it. It was an egregious one, like you'd said. You know, we go back to the drawing board. How do you go about finding somebody? So I think, you know, one of the things that we do is we, you know, if someone leaves, we try and stay in good terms with them. If we had a good relationship, maybe, you know, during the exit interview, look at maybe why it didn't work out here. Was it to a fault of ours? Were they moving on to a bigger and better opportunity? And we were fortunate enough to actually replace that individual. You know, we had one leave we let one go on a Friday and had one start on a Monday. And that's just a matter of keeping in contact with people, constantly be interviewing, I guess, you know, whether it's formal or informal. My dad and I just, you know, we know who's good, and we try and stay in contact with those people and just keep that relationship up. So when something like this happens, you can just insert someone back into that spot.
Interesting. Very. Would you call yourself lucky, or basically, you know, we're smart on having that legacy bench out there?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, in this situation worked out almost too seamlessly. But I mean, you know, I think you create your own luck sometimes. So, you know, you can call it lucky. But I mean, if you're not putting things into place to make that happen, it's, you know, it's not going to happen.
I do believe in that. You create your own luck. So, okay, millennial person, you're on the cusp of the millennial age. You probably fell in love with digital vehicle inspections as a young techie. Yes.
Hands down, best decision we've made in a long time.
And did you have to take Dad kicking and screaming over the line, or was he with you?
Dad was with me, but he wanted to have the, which is understandable, he wanted to have the policies and procedures in place for how the digital vehicle inspection was going to work. And, you know, he poked holes in it. And I, you know, I gave him enough answers that he was satisfied with. He said, okay, we can move on with this. You know, and we were fortunate that our technicians really embraced it. You know, I talked to a lot of shops that's their number one biggest struggle is when they implement it, the pushback from the technicians. I don't know what it was at our shop. I mean, we do have some millennials and we have some older guys, but they really, really embraced the digital vehicle inspections, which was great for us. So, and our clients like it. It's funny. I was listening to your podcast with Uwe from Auto Vitals on my way into work today. And when I pulled into the parking lot, he was just on the part where he was talking about the switch from the way the consumer receives that information from us calling the consumer to them calling us. And as soon as he said that, my millennial service writer was walking in the door, and I grabbed him. I said, get in my truck. I want you to hear this. So I backed it up and played it for him and said, this is what I'm talking about. And it was just like that aha moment for him where he said, I get it. That's why you want us to email them first. That whole process has just been wonderful for us. So
I couldn't pay for that testimonial for the value of the podcast that's out there. I just couldn't. Thank you. Thank you so much. I am so, you know, I'm not sure every guest really appreciates when they come on the show and pay it forward on how it, you know, it has an effect on our and the people in our industry. Customer convenience. Do you do anything special for your customer? I mean, they say, hey, the reason that we go to Lenhart's is because
our shop, you know, we walk this line all the time of wanting to bring millennials into the workforce who don't want to work weekends. They don't want to work long hours. They want to be home with their families. So we've, you know, closed on Saturdays. You know, we're open till 5:30. We're not open late. So that attracts the millennial employee. I mean, the catch 22 to that is millennials want convenience. They want longer hours. They want Saturdays. They want Sundays. So what we've done is said, okay, we're closed on Saturdays. We're home with our families. But for your convenience, we provide loaner vehicles. We do free pickup and delivery service. We have free shuttle service. Those are the things that we've tried to put in place to offset us closing at a normal business hour and being closed on weekends. So that's how we approach that. And for the most part, I think the response has been great from our clients. And, you know, we do little things. We wash and vacuum every vehicle that comes into our shop. So that's one thing that the consumers really love. That's kind of what we're known for. But again, even that is, you know, our competition's starting to do that now. There was a new Subaru dealership built just down the street from us, and they put a car wash in, and now they're washing every car. And we were the only guys on the block that did that for years. So,
hey, you're setting the bar.
We try. Costs us a lot of money to do that, but
I bet you. What else are you doing to create a buzz about your business? Social media. What are you doing to reach?
Social media for us has been a pretty strong point. You know, I manage our Facebook page. I manage our Instagram page. I do a little bit with Twitter, not a whole lot. Didn't get a lot of response from that, but you know, Facebook and Instagram have been really strong for us. We don't sell to our clients on social media. I think that's one mistake a lot of shop owners do, is they try and sell to their clients using the social media platform. People don't want to be sold on social media. They want a touch. It's a touch. It's not a sales tool. We do that. Our sign is probably our biggest marketing tool that we have. We have a very unique sign. We're right on a major highway, and we have probably a 20-foot tall wrench that has a marquee in it. And that's probably our biggest marketing tool that we do. Grassroots is very strong for us. I mean, you know, of all the marketing we do with Tire Pros, our grassroots stuff is the strongest. Getting out into the community, being involved in different community events.
Content in Facebook, social media, organic, it's just the things that happen in your world that you believe your customer would love to hear about?
100%. If I see something that I think is interesting, we put it up on Facebook. You know, if we have something, you know, we find a nest in an air cleaner box, we put that on there. If it's a technician's birthday, we take a picture of them, put it on there. If there's a car cruise in town, if there's a ladies' night, you know, anything that we can sort of engage our clients and the people in there. One of the most successful things that we ever did, and I'm pretty sure I stole this from somewhere. I saw pumpkin spice oil changes are back during the fall, and we put that on our sign, and it got picked up by the local area Facebook page, and had, I think it was like 2,000 likes and 50 some shares. And, you know, it was just something as dumb as just a little saying like that on your sign.
What was the hook? Did I get a pumpkin spice air freshener? What was the hook?
No, we just put it on the sign and said, hey, pumpkin spice oil changes are back. You know, it falls here. And God is my witness, we had a client call and asked if they could get a pumpkin spice oil change. And my service advisor was speechless. And he's like, we don't actually have those. But, and so that was an awkward conversation. But no, I mean, just little things like that. I think, and not to just go off on signs, but I personally believe that if you're on a highway like that, that your sign marquee is probably one of the most underutilized tools that shops have. You know, I can't tell you how many – I go past, you know, four or five shops on my way home, and half of them still have Merry Christmas still on their sign. It's like, come on, man, change your sign. You know, it's just, you know, you can train your clients to look at that sign. So, you know, if 4 days a week I have a birthday up on there, I have a, you know, a wedding congratulation, the one time I put something automotive related, they're trained to always look at it. So we're fortunate that last year we had a guy ask a girl to prom on our sign. So that was a first.
Well, absolutely. You're engaged in your community. You're using your marquee sign to do it. And your philanthropy.
That's really what we use the sign for. I mean, it is a tool, marketing tool. But we started to put birthdays up on our sign probably 10 years ago. And it just sort of caught on, and people call and say, hey, can I get my child's birthday up on your sign? Yep, sure, no problem. And at one point, I think it was maybe about 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, someone had called and got very short with my father about why their child's birthday wasn't on our sign yet. And, you know, I think I've painted a pretty good picture of my dad's personality. So his response was, I will cut that sign down if this is if people are going to give me a hard time about putting, you know, we fix cars first. The sign is second. It's something we do that's nice. And I said, well, how about this? Instead of, you know, just doing it for free, why don't we use the sign to raise money for charity? So we said, okay, let's do this, $20 a side per day, and we'll have them, the client, write the check right out to the charity that we're doing that month and drop it off or mail it in. And so that's how we do it. And it's worked out really, really great for us.
Great, great idea. And a lot of shop owners will do an oil change thing and donate to a cause too. At special times. Wonderful idea. Great idea. You struggling with anything now?
Just to be honest with you, my biggest, I don't like overhead. I don't like debt. And I'm coming to the point in the next couple of years where I have to buy the business from my dad and lease them. And we are aggressively working to make our balance sheet look good and get our financials in order. And we do all right. We have a good shop and we have great sales. We have good margins. But for, you know, a lot of years, this goes back to another generation. My dad was born as a technician. I mean, that's what he did. He was a technician first and foremost. You know, if he looked at that P&L at the end of the month and it had a, you know, it was a positive number, then we were doing good. And like a lot of shops, and I didn't really realize this until I joined a 20 group, that I wasn't alone. I don't want to say I'm struggling with it, but it's something that's at the top of my mind all the time, is just being making sure we're profitable in the right ways.
I think that was your key, in the right ways. So you're optimizing every area of the business. You know, back in the day, as long as there was cash in the bank, you were successful.
Yeah, 100%.
Today, it's a little different. What's successful mean to you, Nick?
Success for me would be we have cars coming in the door, we have happy clients, and we have happy employees. And I'm happy personally. You know, if I can come into work in the morning and want to be here and go home at the end of the day and just feel that we've had a successful day, we've had a successful week, month, year, that is success for me. And if my dad can retire and live comfortably for the rest of his life, and I can, you know, continue to keep this business going in the right direction so that him and my mom can live a comfortable life, that would be a win for me.
Hey, Nick, where are your big ideas coming from?
You know, I talk to a lot of other shop owners. I've sort of formed, I think, strategic alliances with a lot of other younger shop owners. I'm very fortunate that we have a great 20 group that has a lot of young guys. We talk very often. A very close friend of mine has a shop that's about 8 miles from me. We're not direct competitors, but we have become really, really close friends, and we probably talk at least 4 or 5 times a week and bounce ideas off each other and how to grow our business and really push each other, because I think that's one of the biggest struggles I have, is there's nobody to push me other than my dad. So 20 group is a big source of inspiration for me, being in tire pros and being around some of the, in my opinion, the best dealers in the country, and just being able to learn and feed off of those guys has been really inspirational. And my new discovery, and this is another tip of the hat to you and podcasts, but I recently just got on this podcast bandwagon about 2 months ago. So I can't tell you the last time I turned the radio on in my car. It's just I get in my truck, put my earbuds in, and turn a podcast on. So there's just such a wealth of information out there in the podcast world that is just really just gets my juices flowing. So as far as creativity is concerned,
glad to hear it. Are you not Bluetoothed into the car or into the truck?
I don't like. This is just weird. I like to have it right in my ear. There's no distractions, so I'm odd in that way. But yeah.
So Nick, give me an idea, because I love your energy. I love your total focus as a millennial in the business. What are your morning rituals? What do you do in the first 60 minutes of your day that sets the entire day up?
True millennial style. I wake up, I roll over, I grab my phone, and I check my emails. That's the very first, honest to God, I get up, I check my emails, and I check my social media. I hate that social media has that big of a grip on my life, and email does, but it's literally the first thing that I do. No, I start with that. I come in, I you know, got to get my coffee, and I sit down with my guys, and we look at the schedule, and we form a game plan for the day, and start rocking and rolling. I mean, that's really about it. I mean, we just figure out how we're going to tackle the day and kick ass, basically. So.
Thanks. Well, look, it comes to the point in the show where I always ask about great words to live by, some wise words that goes through your mind all the time. So do you have any wisdom or secrets to your success that you'd love to share?
I really believe you just need to follow your heart and where you want to go in business. I mean, it's, you know, if your heart and soul's into it, it's going to reflect in the work that you do, and it's going to reflect in the people that work for you. I honestly believe that. I mean, you know, it's just how you act as an owner and a boss and a businessman. Really, just it comes through your people, and it's reflected through your clients and everything. So I don't have any specific words to live by. There's a lot of great people out there who've written some good quotes and stuff, but my dad always, you know, my dad would always say, you do things right and you take care of people, and you know, it'll come back to you. So that's how we operate our business, and that's how we move forward. So, and that's how we continue to grow.
Continued success to you. I'm impressed. Young man in his 30s, growing into the business, partnering with your dad, having a succession plan on the horizon. Proud of you, bud. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure. I'm excited to be here and be part of it. It was awesome.
Hey, aftermarketers, thanks for joining us. Nick Lenhart. He's got a bright outlook on this business and the industry. He's humbled to be the fourth generation, yet understands the need to lead the business into the future. There's more bio information on Nick Lenhart on his very own show notes page, along with some pictures. Go to remarkableresults.biz/E219. Hey, can you do me a favor? Share this content-rich resource with an industry peer. There is a storehouse of content to listen and learn from. Being a perpetual student is a very powerful strategy. And that is what you need to be today, and the podcast is a powerful source for your personal learning tree. Just email the episode link, share my Facebook page, Twitter account, or LinkedIn connection. You know the value grows because you help ripple the water. I'm grateful and thankful for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.